are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for the police to come arrest that coach, because that's bad news.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
My goal is to, make sure I mention Seth Lugo approximately once every 5 minutes. So we'll see if I can hit that mark. The guy's my boy. He's like Seth Lugo in terms of hitters.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I think he's a very, very underrated guy for catching for fantasy next year. I really do.
Do you like it better than your Facebook message?
I didn't read that. Let me read
we
it.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 154 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. And we are here for another edition of the Prospect podcast. And when we talk about prospects, we always have our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson, on. What's up, Matt?
Nothing too much, Mike. How are you, man?
Doing well, man. We're hitting the home stretch of fantasy baseball and, actual baseball as well, which means there's September call-ups, which means that we need to talk about some guys.
Yeah, man, we got a lot of guys on here. Just did some football drafts. I'm ready to get back into this baseball for the stretch run here.
Yeah, talk about football. I'm a massive Florida State fan, and we are in the middle of facing Ole Miss. It's Monday night when we're recording this, so it's a little bit stressful, but we gotta get everything done. So
when you get that offensive line back in check, huh?
No, our first round quarterback has looked nice though, so I'm in for a little Francois in my life. But hopefully if you hear me scream inadvertently in the middle of the show, then you know why.
He doesn't have a love for crab legs, does he?
No, but Winston is on the sidelines kind of coaching him, so he might in a couple years.
Oh, there you go.
I'm also watching a little Jose Berrios and just trying to pinpoint what the hell is going on with him. And I'll tell you straight up, I'd say 85% of the time he has no idea where the pitch is going. Like as far as his fastball command, it's not there, and it might take a while a lot of times it does take a while with some of these young starters to, get that stuff under wraps and, to start, harnessing their skills. But, right now Berrios has no idea where anything is going. He has no command of any of his pitches. There's times where you see like the flashes of him being a really nice starting pitcher. There was a sequence to Kendrys Morales earlier today where, he just was able to get him out, fairly quickly and, shut him down with an outside fastball, basically because he was mixing his pitches well and throwing with good command. And it's been kind of a unraveling since. He just is not able to do it. So I hope he kind of turns it around, because I've always been really high on the guy. But this goes to show you, if you're kind of just box score watching in the minor leagues and you're not actually watching or reading scouting reports on these guys, that the results might not always be there when they first come up, and they might not ever be there. Berrios has always been undersized, and command has always been kind of a bugaboo for him. But the fact that we're seeing him not be able to find the zone at all is certainly discouraging.
Discouraging is a good word for it. I expected him to be a little bit more of a finished product when he came up, and it's gone worse than that. We could have thought it was. You're right about the command. It's been bad, but I thought it'd be better. And he's a good buy low candidate in dynasty formats for next year. But you can't use him the rest of this year in redraft.
Yeah, I'm certainly trying to find a way to acquire him if I still can in dynasty leagues. For the most part, from what I've seen, the market really isn't there. I think a lot of people kind of are in the same mindset of, this is kind of just a lost year. We'll kind of revisit things going into next season. But I haven't seen a lot of people trying to cut bait yet, which is smart and, in terms of the fantasy community, because he's not a guy worth just throwing away right now. Don't trade him for Seth Lugo, whatever you do. Christ.
No, don't do that. I still like Berrios long term over here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as usual, you can rate and review the podcast on any of the different podcast aggregators, SoundCloud, also iTunes. We always appreciate any 5-star reviews and any feedback. That way we can kind of get things better and move up the ranks. That way we get noticed by more people. We're also sponsored by officialfantasyrings.com. Right now you can use the promo code FWFB at checkout. You receive 20% off of any customizable ring on officialfantasyrings.com. So please go ahead and do that. And Matt, if people aren't following you on Twitter, where can you be followed?
It's MDTomp24, and you're missing out on some good baseball talk.
Yeah, you're always, you know, getting into some conversations about baseball on there, like, all the time. So you're certainly a entertaining follow, and even more entertaining if you enjoy just random, you know, just blabs about baseball in general.
Yeah, I was recently on there, read a news article about some kid throwing 222 pitches in one day for throwing. He threw both complete game, 9-inning games, and both games of a doubleheader. So that was fun.
Strong. I'm sure. Strong.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for the police to come arrest that coach, because that's bad news. Don't be doing that.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. So let's go right into some of these promotions here. We have a pretty long list, I'm not going to lie. So, you know, we're going to try and get through these, not at a fast pace where you're not getting any information about them, but we do want to kind of go through them a bit. And, you know, we'll take some time on some of the players that we feel need to be highlighted a little bit longer than some of the others. But, like I said, we have a lot of, you know, September is that time of year where, you know, rosters expand and you can get, you know, at least a chance to watch some of these young players, you know, just have a cup of coffee in the majors. And, you know, we as fantasy analysts can kind of, you know, sieve through it all and check out who might have some value going into next year and, you know, for the rest of this year as well. So with that in mind, our first name is Yoan Moncada. This is one of the guys that we've been talking about all year long. We've watched him in the Futures game. We've, you know, pretty much been monitoring him since he's came into the minor leagues. You know, he's pretty much going to be playing third base the rest of the way for the Red Sox. He's had a few nice games already, but not much to be said. He's the top prospect in baseball. I think next year he's going to have a starting job. He's, you know, overall in Dynasty, we've already said he is a top five second baseman, five-ish second baseman for us. So is there anything you want to add about Moncada right now that, you know, we haven't talked about before?
Well, I don't know. He might not start next year in the majors. I guess if the Red Sox want to play the service time game with him, they can bring him up about the first week of May and they'll get an extra year. But I mean, I don't think the Red Sox would do that. I just wanted to throw that out there in case, you know, it does happen. Cause I mean, you know how it goes with them guys. It can, but I mean, Moncada, if you watch him play, man, you see the gun, you see the cannon arm from third base. Like, it's nuts. He's taken the third pretty well. I mean, you could see he's adjusting to the pace of the game. Pace of the game in the major league level is faster than minor league level, and he's getting that. He's getting picked off and kind of making a little bit of small miscues. But I mean, that's the stuff that you expect from a guy like him who has really never failed.
No,
he kind of has the appearance of it, you know, coming a little bit easy for him just because he's never struggled in pro ball. And he's still right now hitting 400, but he's striking out a decent amount, and that's going to be an issue because the swing is a little bit long, but it'll get fixed. He's number one prospect in the game for me, from the fantasy aspect and probably in real life for a reason. I'm excited to probably not get him on any of my teams next year because he's going to be overdrafted. But but that being said, I love this kid long term. He looks like a fucking man. He's huge, by the way.
Yeah, his you know, projectability is already starting to come to fruition. There, you know, you're right. His swing is a bit long, and he, you know, has struggled with strikeouts a bit in the minor leagues. Most recently, you know, he bypassed AAA altogether. So he, you know, in AA,
as did Benintendi. Yep,
as did Benintendi, which, you know, is a good thing to note when looking at next year, because there is a very, very high likelihood that he will, you know, be in AAA to start the year. We don't know how long he might stay in AAA, but, you know, he more than likely, I'd say there's like an 80% chance he starts off the year in AAA. So, you know, he'll probably be able to kind of adjust there. And, you know, who knows what will happen at the beginning of next year. But regardless, you know, in short, he's a guy that I think has 30-20, 30-30-ish potential with a strong batting average, switch hitter, you know, even with the strikeouts, the the day and age now where, you know, batting average, a solid batting average nowadays is 260 plus, you know, and I just, you know, he's been able to, you know, accrue 275 or, you know, better batting averages throughout all the minor leagues while maintaining a plus 20% strikeout rate. So the strikeouts don't really bother me is pretty much what I'm saying. And I think that he, again, for long-term dynasty keeper leagues is a guy that I think at his peak will be a 30-30 player. Maybe, like we've mentioned earlier on other shows, a 20-30 guy to start. And then as he grows and gets a bit slower, it could be more of a 30-20 guy, 30-15, 35-15, something like that. But regardless, if you're getting 40 to 50 total stolen bases and home runs combined, that is a premium fantasy asset, and that is Yoan Moncada. So
he's a future first-round pick in fantasy formats for 5-6 years.
Agreed. I mean,
he's a monster. He's owned everywhere. If for some reason he's not, I don't know what league you're playing in, but the dude is simply – he's going to be one of the best players in the game for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he's owned everywhere. I mean, he's only about 40% owned on ESPN right now. You know, and I mean, if you want to talk just right now for 2016 the rest of the way – I can understand in like very shallow formats, like 10 teamers not having them, but pretty much in any format, he's an automatic add, you know.
Upside's too great. Yep.
Yeah. If you're sitting there, you know, holding on to Logan Forsythe or, you know, Ben Zobrist, Neil Walker, if he's still on your roster for some reason, you know, all those guys are droppable for Yoan Moncada, as well as even Jose Ramirez, who has been solid. He doesn't offer quite as much upside. Even Dustin Pedroia, you know, at this point in the year and head-to-head especially, if you're just looking for somebody to, you know, really take off, I don't mind grabbing Moncada for any of them.
No, not at all. Nope.
All right, so we already went a lot longer on a guy that I thought was going to be shorter. So let's go to Raimel Tapia, who I know you mentioned prior to the show has not been getting enough buzz for getting promoted. So, you know, what's the deal with his role for right now? And, you know, for Keeper Dynasty Leagues, what can we expect in the off season and going into 2017?
Well, I play in a lot of daily leagues, and I saw, you know, Charlie Blackman was going to miss a little bit of time. And they kind of got Jaharo Parra playing first base right now. So Tapia was going to play center field, and he's hit leadoff the last two games. So I was happened to be on my computer at the time, and I grabbed him, and he's hit 500 for me in the last two games. He's 5-for-10. He's a dude, though. He's not going to walk. He's a little quick twitch dude. Goofy batting stance if you haven't seen it.
But especially with two strikes, he gets in that stupid little crouch.
Oh yeah, chokes up. He looks kind of weird, but he's a guy with above average power and above average to plus hit tool. I'd put plus on it now with confidence. Potential to be plus down the line. And he's playing in the best ballpark for a fantasy baseball player. He's not getting enough attention for getting called up, which I guess the playing time is going to be an issue. But Colorado's fading out of it, and I think this is a guy that's going to get more playing time as the season goes, and he might be a sneaky ad for you for the rest of this season. I love this kid. He's in my top 20 dynasty prospects, including hitters and pitchers, just because of the whole total package. I love this kid. A little lefty, it's just all he's going to do is hit. He's hit everywhere he's been, and he's going to continue to do that.
Yeah, he's started in three of the four games that he has been up so far. And, you know, I mean, he led off two of those games, which is nice. You know, we'll see what happens with him. But I do think he's an automatic ad, especially in deeper formats. 12 team leagues, I think he doesn't present the current upside that a David Dahl did when he got promoted. So, you know, if you're okay with not having, you know, like Jorge Soler, Randall Grichuk, there's other guys that have just been kind of tearing it up lately. Even Byron Buxton, who, you know, we're not supposed to be talking about him on this show, but you know, Byron Buxton has looked great since he's come back, and I will give him credit where credit's due. He has looked to be, he just looks much more comfortable at the plate, and that's not due to just the results of him hitting home runs. I'm just saying in general, he looks more comfortable up there. Seems like he has a plan. Seems like he might actually be healthy as well. So just stay tuned on Buxton. But as far as Tapia goes, in 12 team leagues or shallower, I'm okay with kind of standing pat if you have some other options that you feel more comfortable with going forward, because because, you know, even though Tapia is going to be playing in Colorado, he is very young and still has a ton of growing up to do. You know, in AAA, he got a very limited amount of exposure this year, about 110 plate appearances, didn't hit any home runs, but and also didn't walk at all. Just kind of doing his best Rougned Odor impression and, you know, not walking. But he also has maintained a strong ability to have a high contact rate. He only struck out 18% of the time, and that's a career high for him, essentially. So this is a guy that, you know, we've mentioned before as well, that I think is going to be a strong fantasy asset in years to come. All he has to do is kind of get bigger, build up that frame a bit more. I think he's 160 pounds soaking wet right now. You know, once he develops a little bit more muscle to that frame, adds another 20, 25 pounds, I think we could be seeing a guy that at least hits, you know, 15 to 20 home runs a year and can also steal you 25, 30 bags as well. Kind of an outfield version of Moncada in a sense, but just isn't there yet.
Yeah, I'm a little bit not as aggressive on his overall future as you. I have him more for the 12 to 15 with 15 to 20 bags. He's a very inefficient base stealer, meaning he gets thrown out a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that'll eventually, you know, they're going to be less running with him because he's going to be at the top of the order with his skill set.
Which is weird because he doesn't walk, but.
But his hit tool is so good.
Yeah.
That I think top of the order is ultimately where he needs to be. But yeah, the stealing, he needs to work on his instincts there. He's a really bad outfielder also, which is kind of weird for a guy that's fast. He can't play center field because he gets such bad reads. He has no throwing arm. So he's just restricted to simply left field. He's a really weird player. He's got skill sets that don't really are typical together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's a good dude long term for sure, like you said. And yeah, I mean, that's it, I guess. You guys know the story. I think an outfield version of Moncada for the next year or two is an apt comparison. So I'm on board with that.
Well, he's one for one in stolen base attempts in the majors so far. So take that, Matt, as far as his success rate. Now, his last 73 stolen base attempts in the minor leagues, he has not converted on 17 of them. So that's
bad.
Obviously a problem. You know, and that's something that also, like you mentioned, is a skill that he will have to acquire. He, like I mentioned, he is nowhere near a finished product. But in terms of upside, which is what we want to bet on, he has about as high of an upside as you can kind of think of here. You know, so I'm a little bit higher on the power upside because of where he plays, especially the batting average upside as well. I think that, you know, 320, 330 is certainly in the cards here because of his contact ability and, you know, just his swing and, you know, all of that. But regardless, I think that this is a strong fantasy asset. He definitely won't be up to start the season next year. He will be probably promoted much later than Moncada if I had to make a firm guess on it as well. So
I think his future is strongly tied to what they do with Cargo, to be honest, or Blackman.
But don't you think Dahl is more kind of you know, in with that? I don't know. I feel like Dahl is the guy that if they do make a move there would be the one they called up and had you know, in a more permanent role.
Yeah, I was factoring Dahl in already in a permanent role. I agree with you.
True.
And I'd rather own Dahl over Tapia also.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean,
Dahl is a top five fantasy prospect. You know, even if you want, I mean, if you don't consider him a prospect, that's fine. But, you know, guys that haven't accrued at-bats yet, I think Dahl is either the one or two guy, whichever way you want to kind of go about it with him and Moncada. They're flip-floppable if you want to look at it that way. But, you know, Tapia is more of a top 25 to top 40 fantasy asset, in my opinion, in terms of prospects right now. So that's just kind of to compare between all of those guys. But Tapia, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he kind of hit that upside.
I completely agree.
Would you trade Tapia right now for Byron Buxton or the other way around? You know, if you're the Buxton owner, would you go to the Tapia owner and say, hey, I will give you Buxton for Tapia?
It's an interesting deal. And I think if I'm the Buxton owner, I think I would.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you would ask for Seth Lugo as well.
Yeah. Not that much. Whoa.
My goal is to, you know, make sure I mention Seth Lugo approximately once every 5 minutes. So we'll see if I can hit that mark.
Well, 2 for 2 so far. No, I mean, that's a really good, interesting question. I guess it depends if you believe in what Buxton's doing. If you believe in Buxton, I would say no, because Buxton's a legit 40 stolen base guy. And if you're like me and you don't really know what to think, I might do it because Tapia has a really, really high floor. And Buxton's floor is what we've seen this year, and that's AAA. So I think I would take – if I was in a team that wanted to contend, I think I would take Tapia, to be honest.
All right. Let's move on to a few starters here. So we have Jake Thompson of the Philadelphia Phillies. He got promoted. He has been absolute trash since he's been promoted as well. Wasn't very good in AAA either.
It's an insult to trash everywhere.
Yeah, wasn't very good in AAA either. I'm going to be flat out honest here. I've never been particularly high on the guy. I'm mentioning him because he is a call-up, and he's, you know, extremely young still. He's only 22. But, you know, any type of future upside here for somebody like Thompson, for me, I'm just kind of avoiding until I see a skills growth at some point here in the future.
I'm right there with you, man. Next time you talk bad about my cousin Jake, though, we need to speak before we get on. But, no, I'm with you. He's a number four starter for me long term. He doesn't have an out pitch, and the ball. I'm not a big fan of the park he plays in. For him, he's not really a ground ball guy, which he needs to be with his, you know, with the repertoire he has. He doesn't do it for me. He's a really way better real life asset than fantasy asset. So he's not on my fantasy radar at all. For next year, anyways. Maybe longer, but not next year.
Yeah, I agree. And sorry, I have to hold on a second. I'm watching Brian Dozier hit another home run. It was close.
Yeah, the game went on today forever, so he might still be playing.
No, he is. I'm in like the third inning, so he's still got two more home runs on the way.
The third one was a moonshot, by the way. So wait for that one.
It's insane. It's insane. So let's go to another guy that I'm a bit higher on, Jeff Hoffman. Even though he's in Coors, he has much better skills. You know, we still need to see him kind of rein in the walks a bit. He struggled with that in AAA. He does have three really nice offerings, a nice fastball, good velocity, kind of similar to John Gray. Not fully, because he doesn't have nearly the ground ball tilt that Gray does, which, you know, again, I feel like Gray is a step ahead of Jeff Hoffman, not just because of, you know, the fact that he's been up longer, but just in terms of his overall repertoire and maturity, I think that, you know, Gray is still a tick above Hoffman. But Hoffman, even though he's in Coors, I am much more, you know, excited about than somebody like Thompson. How about you?
Even though he's in Coors, I'm still more excited about Hoffman, but his pitching arsenal in Coors kind of scares me.
Yeah.
I love the kid long term. If Hoffman was in any, like, I legit any other park for me, even Arizona or whatever, I would put him in my top 15 starting pitchers for fantasy. No joke. I love this kid coming out of the draft. He should have gone 1-1, but he got hurt. Had Tommy John. He's a kid from New York, from upstate New York. So I think he's a little bit late bloomer as far as the pitching goes. Can't pitch all year round up in New York. So, I like that. He went to East Carolina, so obviously he wasn't that highly recruited. Went down there, did well. Unfortunately, got hurt before he was in the 1-1 conversation. He's got a 70 slider, and I would put a future 65 on the curveball. And he throws 93, 95, and he can touch 97 with sink and run. And he's unreal to me. I like him. Him and John Gray are a nasty 1-2 for Colorado, but it's in fucking Coors. And I can't say, I mean, it's not as bad as it was a couple years ago. I mean, we saw Tyler Chatwood throw a 2-hit shutout last night or the other day, so it can be done. I'm still buying in on Hoffman. I bought in on Gray in a couple dynasty leagues already. I actually own Gray and Hoffman in the same team. I really, really like this kid long term. He's not going to be a whip guy. He's going to hurt you in the whip. He's going to walk quite a few guys at first. I mean, with the slider and the curveball being as devastating as they are, they move a ton. And I don't know if he can really harness it enough yet, but he's a future monster. If he ever gets traded out of Coors, I'm all over him.
All right. So how about Joe Musgrove?
I need to put my pants back on.
Would you trade Hoffman for Joe Musgrove, or are you taking Hoffman still?
I'll take Hoffman. I like the upside.
All right. I mean, sounds like you're pretty high on him, and we all need to take some notice. Another name, just kind of going off the board a bit, we have Raul Mondesi. He's been up. He's been okay, but I'm just not in right now. I don't know if you have a different stance, but I mean, with middle infield being so deep, I'm just kind of right now.
Yep, and he's going to – you're exactly right about middle infield being deep. He's going to be a guy. He's going to – his number one tool for you and us would be accumulating his numbers just because he's going to play all the time because of the glove. He might end up with 8 to 12 homers and maybe 20 steals next year if he plays full-time second base. I mean, cool, but I mean, you can do better. Shortstop at second base, like we say all the time, is deep. I keep seeing people, experts on Twitter and stuff, saying how it's a position is shallow, and it's not.
No, we were saying that prior to the season starting, and there's a lot of people that I respect that were saying that, shortstop especially was extremely shallow this year. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have to go with your gut. And, for me personally, I feel like the positions, not just short, but second base as well, are very deep, and they will be deep for a long time. I saw this coming with all of the promotions coming up, prior to Carlos Correa getting his shot and, a number of other guys. Coming up to the league, I just kind of saw that coming because shortstop traditionally has been a very weak place. But, for me, I know Mondesi has a ton more power than Alcides Escobar, but I kind of view him as Alcides Escobar.
Yep, that's a fair comp. That's kind of what I was getting at, too. The numbers are similar. He doesn't walk either, so kind of a good fit.
Yeah, not a big walk guy. Hasn't, compiled more than 10 home runs in any one minor league season. He has a bit more pop than Escobar, but the best asset you'll see is some speed. I think next year we're going to be looking at him as an AL only middle infielder.
Yeah. It's worth noting when I did my prospect update in, June, I had him 112 in all of baseball for Mondesi. And that's pretty much just due to proximity, with a lot of graduations and people moving up, I would still probably put him in the same ballpark. So he's been passed over by a lot of more exciting players. But he's just a guy, to me, like I said, that he's just going to play every day because of the glove, and he's just going to accumulate numbers, counting stats, and he's not going to be no flashy fantasy tools.
And so. We're all about flashy.
Oh, yeah. I guess another fair and apt comparison is he's a poor man's Dansby Swanson.
For now.
For now, and you don't want to be a poor man's Dansby Swanson, because Dansby Swanson himself right now is not really a fantasy viable guy.
let's talk about Dansby Swanson for a second, because he's on the list. We've already mentioned him on the main podcast, but we'll bring him up here since, again, we are a prospect pod. So what are we feeling about Dansby, what we've seen so far? To be honest with you, it's kind of worse than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. It's just right now, it's just not going to play for fantasy. His defense is fine. I'll say that. I've seen him play defense and he's been completely fine out there. He looks like a major league regular defender. But right now he kind of looks a little bit like Brendan Ryan at the plate, and that's kind of a problem.
Ooh, that's good. I haven't heard that. That's a blast from the Cardinals past.
It's an unfortunate blast from the past. Yes.
Yeah. I think right now, if I had Dansby Swanson, I'd be trying to trade him for Seth Lugo.
ding, ding, no. ding. Keep up the pace.
No, anyways, I think we nailed it with Dansby. He's not a viable guy right now. He's a really good player long term. Atlanta brought him up for one reason only, and that was to pacify the fans after they kind of ripped off them for putting a new stadium in and all that good stuff. And there's no reason for him to be down because they're going to add him to the 40-man because he's going to be their shortstop next year. So why not get him up here now?
He did have a stretch earlier where he had a hit in six of seven games. I do project him to be their long-term leadoff hitter, if and when.
Number two guy for me.
Yeah, it might be Albies. Yeah, it might be Albies who ends up.
And Enciarte is still there too, so.
Yeah, we'll see. This is certainly more of a long-term play. But people that drafted him highly in their reload leagues, you have a dynasty league and you're trying to do your just standard, reload draft where you're acquiring all the guys that were drafted in the, last year's draft. Swanson was probably taken amongst the top five, and, he's no Brendan Rodgers. We'll just say that for fantasy.
He's not. And you'll be very happy to see where Brendan Rodgers is ranked on my next release of my updated prospect ranks.
I hope it's low because I traded a Brendan Rodgers, among others, for David Dahl. So.
Yeah, you traded the number three guy for the number two guy, so you're fine.
We'll see what happens. All right, so let's move on to some more names here. So we have Raul Alcantara, if I pronounce that correctly, another Alcantara for the Oakland Athletics. I'm a little bit intrigued here. I'm not gonna lie. Doesn't have the biggest pedigree, and he also doesn't have like the biggest name or the best projection. But when he went to Nashville, AAA Nashville, he was solid, man. Yeah, he got a 1.18 ERA, almost 10 strikeout almost 6 strikeouts per 9, which isn't something great, but really kept the walks low. 0.6 walk per 9, which is stellar. Doesn't have the greatest offerings in the world, but I really like the changeup, and he has a decent fastball. So fastball changeup combination, a pretty decent ground ball tilt, going to be pitching in Oakland. This is a guy I think that you can kind of keep your eye on for the future. Definitely not a guy to add for this year unless you're in, an AL only and you just need a starter for a day. But, at least for the future, I think that this is a guy to keep your eye on. How about you?
I think you did well, and I think your description of him was perfect for what I agree with everything you said. And the first thing to do with him is you look at the numbers and you figure out, oh, it's in the PCL. I mean, that's pretty good. It's amazing for the numbers he put up in the PCL. But then you look, okay, he's in Nashville. Nashville's probably the safest PCL park. You're not dealing with the high elevations as most other parks you are. But then you look at his numbers. His splits on the road in the PCL are actually better than at home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's weird. It's not a lot of innings on either side of the coin there, but I think he's a mid rotation arm long term, and he's in Oakland, so it's always nice there. He should have a rotation spot for next year locked up. He was a big ticket Red Sox signing, I believe, a couple years back. I don't know if that's correct or not. Yes, he was. He was in the Red Sox, and he got dealt to the A's. I don't remember what trade it was, unfortunately, but. Red Sox, anytime the Red Sox sign a pitcher for big money in international market, you always take notice because they turn out to be pretty well most of the time. It seems like they hit more often than not in that department.
Agreed.
Little known fact, Carlos Martinez was a Red Sox signing before hitting it with St. Louis. He made up a name and had to get the contract voided, so then the Cardinals swooped in and grabbed him. But anyways, I like Alcantara as a number four for next year for the real life A's. And he's kind of a polished guy. He's been around for a while. I think mid rotation ceiling. So he's a guy worth monitoring. I'm not going to go crazy to try to add him anywhere, but I could definitely see him reeling off a nice stretch or two next year.
Yeah, agreed. Let's see. We'll move on to the list here. We'll talk about just a reliever for right now, but somebody that I think is a little bit interesting, especially for NL only and especially deeper leagues. But let us know a little bit about Vicente Campos of the Arizona Diamondbacks reliever. He has a mid-rotation starter upside, pretty decent changeup, another nice fastball as well that reaches almost as high as 98. What are we thinking here about Campos, at least from a deeper league standpoint, and somebody to keep our eye on?
He used to go by Jose Campos. It was a Mariner and Yankee prospect. He was involved in that trade with Pineda and
Jesus
Montero, the Golden Boy.
It probably involved Seth Lugo.
Seth, yes, he was in that trade with him and his number one spin rate. As you can see, we love Seth Lugo. Campos, if he was in a different situation, I might be higher, but he's in Arizona, so it's not Coors Field, but it's not the greatest place either. He put up good numbers with the Yankees. Again, I think he's similar to Alcantara, as in mid-rotation arm. You got to think he's going to be hitting an innings limit sometime soon because he's approaching 150. And he's always had a kind of a checkered injury history, and the 150 blows away the 54 he threw last year. So I think that's going to be a problem. But, he's a good guy to keep in mind long-term. NL-only leagues, I would grab him because I think, with Arizona for next year, I don't see why he wouldn't be in the rotation to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not expecting that big of things. He's going to be a modest K guy. He won't walk a lot of guys, which is nice, but he doesn't have a put-away pitch, and not having a put-away pitch in Arizona might be trouble.
You kind of touched on the Yankees for a second. We'll move over to a couple of guys that got promoted after we had our last show. And those two guys are Aaron Judge and Tyler Austin. Austin looks like he's going to be playing majority of the time against righties, which is what he's done so far. And then you also have Aaron Judge up as well. I don't think it's really a competition between the two. Judge is certainly the higher upside fantasy play. We haven't seen anything really come to fruition as of yet. A couple home runs, but the strikeout rate, like we always known with Judge, has really taken effect here. Almost 46% for the short stint that he's had thus far. Mind you, people, it's not going to be that bad. At least we hope it's not going to be that bad. So, this is his first taste in the major leagues. Understandable that this is going to happen. I think he is securely a guy that I am just, both of these guys really, for this year, I'm just kind of throwing out the window, and I'm just going to kind of keep my eye on how they do. Aaron Judge, again, still has some of the best raw power in the, not the minor leagues anymore, but in the prospect realm. But as far as Tyler Austin, because everybody knows about Aaron Judge, I think that he's a, a safe guy to keep monitoring. And as far as next year goes, we'll kind of monitor where he ends up getting playing time. I don't know if he'll start with the Yankees. I doubt it. I think he'll stay in AAA. But Tyler Austin, Greg Bird is going to return next year, and he more than likely will take that first base spot. But Austin is getting time in the outfield and at first base as well. So just give us a little quick update on Austin as of right now. He's kind of gone back and forth in terms of interesting, and then people have kind of thrown him out the window a bit. Where are you at currently with him?
Tyler Austin had a really, really nice year in the Saudi League in 2012, and that's kind of where I started to notice him. He was originally thought of as a first base only guy, but he can actually play the outfield corners also. I don't know how, and probably not well, but I mean, he can be out there, so it's not like a total dumpster fire, especially in right field in New York where you don't have to cover that much ground. But he put a really good season up in 2012 in the Cat League, the Sally, which is hard league to hit in. 320, 405, 598. 22 doubles, 14 bombs, 17 stolen bags. I mean, that's a nice year. But then then he got hit in the wrist and kind of had wrist issues, and the numbers kind of took a dip. And but he kept getting promoted. I mean, so the Yankees obviously saw some things they liked because they kept pushing him hard. And then he kind of slowed down. He hit double A in 2014. And then he hit double A in 2013. And then he spent 2014 the whole season in double A. 2015 he spent the first part of the season in double A. He started to move slow. 2016, he was even in AA to start the year. So he hit a roadblock. It looks like he's getting healthy because he went to AAA in Scranton, and he hit three over 320 with 13 bombs, 24 doubles, which you got to think some of those doubles will turn into home runs at Yankee Stadium. But, I mean, he's a dead pull hitter. So down the line, he'll be okay. And left field, the left center field gap won't hurt him as much. But he's not the most – yeah, he's 25 years old now. He's going to be 26 next year. He's turning 26 in a couple days here, actually. So he'll be 26 going into next year. I think he's a bench bat long term. I think you nailed it with Greg Bird coming back, and Judge will be in right field. Clint Frazier coming up sometime might push Judge to DH if they still have Gardner and Ellsbury around. So Austin might be in a squeeze for at bats here. So
yeah, I think that Austin probably starts in AAA next year. If not, mm-hmm. He is a bench bat. He could be Bird's platoon partner over at first base. Mainly face lefties. We could see that in the cards for him. But the one thing I will say is he has demonstrated a really good walk rate throughout the minor leagues, which is something we always like to look for. The strikeouts have always been a bit of an issue, so he could be completely negating his strong walk rate by consistently striking out. And the fact that he really hasn't gotten that much time in the minor leagues. I mean, he's gotten a sufficient amount, but we're sitting at he's hitting a Rays level of age at this point with their hitting prospects. So for me, I think that Austin is a kind of a middling option at this point, and not somebody that you should be targeting in any type of keeper dynasty league. So Aaron Judge is certainly the more interesting of these.
I think best case is like Steve Pierce without the second base versatility.
Sure. Yeah.
Or like a Nolan Reimold is like the floor.
Yeah, a guy that faces lefties dominantly. Yep. That you know, and with the strong, you know, skills. I mean, like Danny Valencia is a guy that kind of, you know, surged a bit later on in his career. We could see that with Austin, a little bit more of a late bloomer type guy. But at least for now, he's not somebody that you want to really rely on or look for. So you know, that's that for those Yankee guys. A guy that I've always been interested in, and I don't really quite know why, he's just always kind of caught my eye, and I've watched him a ton. Joey Wendell out of Oakland, another Oakland prospect, second baseman. We'll talk about Chad Pinder in this as well, since both of them have made their debuts in the major leagues. Pinder, obviously, the more interesting from a fantasy angle, at least for right now, because he got a bit more buzz, you know, in the minor leagues, and since he's been up. But give us a little bit of a you know, just kind of a synopsis on both of them. Me personally, with Wendell, he's a guy that, you know, has always had the ability to put the bat to the ball, really strong eye at the plate. Finally had a bit of a power peak this season. Was able to, you know, finally hit 12 double-digit home runs, and put up 14 stolen bases. Been doing a solid job at second base defensively. They don't have a long-term answer at second base necessarily, unless they decide to move Semien over there, which is probably the best move for them anyways.
Yeah, it might be.
In general, I like Joey Wendell as a, you know, especially, you know, again, with middle infield being so deep, you know, a guy that can go 10-10 isn't the highest upside in the world, but at least for AL only owners that are looking for, you know, lower end guys, I think Joey Wendell could be that person. But, you know, Chad Pinder has the higher upside, so let us know about him.
Well, I just want to mention something on Wendell really quickly.
Yeah.
The thing that sticks out to me with him is the high doubles totals.
Yeah,
that he's
very high.
Put up.
Yeah, Billy Butler-ish.
Yeah, and I think he's 26, so he might be coming into the year. He might have his best year might be next year, you know, like 27. Guys, that seems to be the year when a lot of guys put it together for whatever reason. And I could see some of those doubles turning into over the fence pop, and I wouldn't be shocked if he gets into the 15 to 18 range next year. And that's playable. I mean, second base is all of a sudden turning into a good offensive position, so it might not be in the deepest leagues, but in AL only, he's a name you definitely need to know. Pinder, he's more exciting, as exciting as in the Oakland A sense, I guess. I'm not really big on Pinder. He's probably a second or third baseman long term, which again, I think he's a utility projection, to be honest, with above average offensive potential. So you're looking at a guy that can probably be, man, it's tough, 260 with 40 extra base hits.
Yeah.
A handful of steals, if any. He's not really quick. He's a kind of a bigger dude for a middle infielder. He's not that exciting. And I know it's probably the easy answer, but I keep saying it about a lot of these guys, but he's a typical Oakland A guy that's not, doesn't capture much. You know what I mean? He doesn't do it for me. What about you?
Doesn't tickle your fancy. No, I mean, he's definitely not Seth Lugo. Don't get crazy. But, you know, I like Wendell more, and that's because I think that he's just a more advanced, more mature hitter. You know, if you look at the minor league numbers, you know, the power hasn't really been there. You bring up a great point about the doubles. So, you know, for me, I'm still going with Wendell. Both of them, I think, are bench guys, though. So, you know, they could easily get traded in a deal, you know, tomorrow that sends, you know, every single player on their team for, like, you know, two players to be named later or something, since that's the way Billy Bean likes to roll nowadays. But, you know, at least for me, I think they're both essentially bench bats. And I think the one that has the better ability to stick and provide a little bit of value for deeper AL-only leagues is Wendell. So for me, I'm going Wendell. And, you know, at least for Pinder, I will bring up that, you know, he's played the majority of his games at short since he's been promoted. You know, he has led off one game, but he's mainly staying eighth or ninth in the lineup. You know, he's gotten a handful of hits. Not really. There's nothing in his profile that's strong. He doesn't have a strong walk rate. Doesn't make a ton of contact, doesn't have the best swing in the world, doesn't have, you know, the only thing going for him and why he's a bit interesting is because he has done well in terms of scoring runs, and he's, you know, had double digit pop, 15 home runs essentially in each of the last two seasons. Yep. So
second in the Pacific Coast League amongst middle infielders in home runs.
Yeah, so that's why he got a little bit of buzz coming into, you know, his promotion here, but it doesn't
care to guess who number one was?
Let's see. Let me guess. It's not Trey Turner, is it? Who is it? It's
Ryan Schimpf.
Is it? Ryan Schimpf, yeah. Man. That guy has been an absolute star. The guy's my boy. He's like Seth Lugo in terms of hitters.
How jealous are you that I have Ryan Schimpf and Seth Lugo on our Friends with Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League team?
Ultra jelly, bro. Ultra jelly.
Should be.
All right, so let's move on to, you know, we'll go to Hunter Dozier next, you know, since we're kind of talking about a few middle infielders, even though Dozier's not a middle infielder. I'm happy for him. He finally is going to get the opportunity to come up and play in the major leagues. We have seen the best and the worst from Dozier in the minor leagues overall. What are we thinking here at this point? Like, what do we think that his turnaround this season in particular is something that can stick? Or are we thinking that he's going to kind of revert back to, you know, what he did at, you know, his earlier years in 2013 and 2014?
I really like what he did this year.
Yeah, so do I.
The strikeouts are a little bit too high. But like you said, with the other hitters before, that's not as big of a deal now as it was 10 years ago. He's going to play. I mean, he's a potential replacement. I mean, they have Cuthbert now, with Moustakas is going to contract year, I believe, next year. They have Cuthbert, who has earned the right to get more playing time also with how he's been, which kind of creates a little jam there. Because I do like Dozier, and I think he got shit on when he got drafted, because everyone looked at it as definitely what Kansas City was doing was saving money, kind of wasting the pick, end quote, is what a lot of things I heard, to afford Sean Manaea in the second round, or the competitive balance round, whatever it was, supplemental round.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of like he got that bill like that, and then he struggled. He was really, really bad last year. Hit 213 in Double A. That'll get you off everybody's prospect lists. He's put together a very nice year. He's put a strong year repeating Double A, got promoted pretty quickly to Triple A, and he's been great. 36 doubles is the number I'm focused on. Right back there with Wendell, those 36 doubles added to those 15 homers. I mean, you got to figure as he even gets bigger and more mature, he could be definitely an easy 20-homer guy in the majors. I have no clue, I'll be honest with you right now, what the batting average will be. I think the strikeouts will be a little high. I would bet 250 with 20 homers.
Yeah, I'm a little higher on him, honestly. If, you know, things kind of come around, I think he can hit for more than 20 home runs. I don't love the home ballpark. Kauffman Stadium is certainly not a great, stomping grounds for hitting home runs. But, you know, I think he's made considerable gains this year. His walk rate has kind of fluctuated a bit, but he has been able to kind of resurrect his career here in 2016. And, you know, we'll see what happens here in this short cup of coffee. I'm hoping they give him a decent amount of playing time. He hasn't logged a major league at bat yet. So we'll check that out once he does get some playing time. And you'll certainly hear us in the offseason possibly mention him and just kind of keep you all updated. But he, in my opinion, is certainly ready to be called up in a more permanent role. And, you know, we'll kind of see what happens. He can play a little outfield if they need him to, which, you know, we'll kind of check out as well if he ends up moving positions. But nice size, you know, 6'4", 220 is a solid, you know, big league size. His power is legit, you know, so we'll see what happens, man. I'm hoping that, you know, we see the peak, which in my opinion could be 25 bombs and a 250 to 280 average. So we'll,
you know,
check it out.
This is kind of a lazy comp on him because it actually fits like
Michael Franco.
I was looking more like, I mean, Josh is already 25, so I mean, he just turned 25, but he's 25 nonetheless. I see a little bit of like Jed Jerko here. Low batting average, not going to walk a lot, and he's got some pop. He crushes lefties. Not the most exciting guy, but AL-only leaguers need to know where he's at next year.
No.
You know what I mean? They need to find him. The strikeout-to-walk ratio is going to be ugly, but he's going to pop a lot of extra base hits. So it'll be a nice asset there. But he doesn't have a concrete role. So it's really hard to go into the season, you know, looking for Hunter Dozier, but just be aware where he's at.
Yeah, I don't mind the comp, and I agree with that. So Let's move on to Detroit's possibly only prospect worth mentioning ever, and that's Jacoby Jones.
I like Jacoby.
Yeah.
Just needs a layoff the bud so you can – well, I guess now it doesn't matter because now he's in the majors on the 40-man, so.
Yeah, he is of no relation to Jacoby Jones that was on Dancing with the Stars and, you know, also on the Baltimore Ravens. And
oh, he's not? Oh, I thought he was.
Actually, I don't know for sure, so he possibly could be, but I'm positive.
I think he's Seth Lugo's cousin.
He might be, and if he is, then there's greatness in Jacoby Jones. in terms of what we'll see from Jones, his obvious skill is the ability to steal bases. He doesn't do it at an amazing clip, but he does have a solid all-around skill set there. You know, what do you like about somebody like Jacoby Jones? To be honest with you, I don't have any shares anywhere, and he's somebody that I'm just not that high on personally. I think that Detroit is allergic to bringing up hitting prospects, in my opinion. So he's kind of a guy I've glossed over, but is there anything that's changed in his profile that makes you feel like we should be kind of looking at things a bit differently?
Not really. I mean, I think the thing about Jones you need to know in AL only leagues is his best calling card is his athleticism and his versatility that comes with that. He in the minor leagues this year has played third base and center field, which is a weird combination.
I was going to say, does athleticism and versatility mean defensively? Because fantasy owners don't care about that.
And that's exactly the position eligibility in AL only will be nice for you. I think he's a super utility guy, Mark DeRosa-ish.
Okay.
I like the pop, but I don't know. He's not really good enough defensively to play anywhere. He can play everywhere, you know, because he's kind of like it's kind of the old saying, like if you have two quarterbacks, you don't really have any.
Yeah.
If you have multiple positions, it's because you're not really good at one. And I think that's where you see here. But if he gets the playing time, he could go 15-15, but he won't. Because he doesn't offer anything on defense, except for, again, playing a lot of spots.
Well, he's played center and third in his limited, you know, stint right now with Detroit. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those are kind of off the wall.
He was a primary shortstop last year.
Yeah, and I see that. So, you know, I think that that's a situation where, like, if something happens to Jose Iglesias, maybe in a pinch they could put him there. Castellanos, I'm assuming, you know, since he probably won't be back the rest of the year, you know, you'll be seeing Jacoby Jones sit at third base a ton, you know, probably in center field whenever they're facing a lefty, which they have faced a lefty here recently.
He hits lefties better than righties, Jones does. Not surprising.
Yeah. I don't mind the 15-15 upside, and I don't think that he – won't be a starter at some point. You know, I don't think next year necessarily he'll be a starter, but we might see him, you know, become a guy that gets a full-time role possibly at the end of the year. And you never know with injuries. So, you know, I guess 15-15 sounds okay, but he might not hit that for
a little bit of, you know, I don't want to undersell the speed. I mean, he can run. He's athletic. I mean, in a suspension, his minor league season, God, I cannot talk. His minor league season started.
This is all stated.
Yeah, that's fine. Whatever. Everyone already thinks I'm an idiot, so they can add to it.
No, that's not true. But, only Kurt Schilling thinks that you're a douche nozzle. That's the only thing that I've heard from anybody.
I think Kurt Schilling's a lovely man, so we'll stick with that. But anyways, I mean, his season started late with the weed suspension. So, I mean, in an abrupted – he played less than 100 games in the minors. He stole 13 bags. He had 7 triples, which that's kind of interesting.
That's great, yeah.
So, I mean, he's a guy – he's going to be exciting to watch. He'll be a highlight reel with Detroit when he plays because, I mean, he gets bad reads, but he can make up for it because he can – you know, he's athletic. He's an exciting guy enough. He's the one that's worth gambling on an AL only late in the draft, maybe next year. Because if he plays, he gets the upside. But right now, at the end of the season, I mean, just today, I was watching Detroit play, and he started the game at third base, got removed for defense because they brought in Andrew Romine. So.
Well, I mean, I know we're going long on Jones here, but he did go 23-17 in 2014.
And that's, you know, fair.
And that came with a solid on base as well. I mean, he does have some strikeout problems, so we'll just say that off the bat. He has the propensity to strike out at larger than a 25% clip, which isn't very good. And, you know, when you sprinkle in the fact that, you know, he doesn't have astoundingly great walk rates, not great plate skills. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But I do think, you know, if we're – willing to say that he's a 15-15 player, then I don't think it's a far stretch to say that he could be a 20-20 player, which is certainly something we look for fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, he's always had a high contact ability, you know, since he does have some decent batting averages throughout his minor league logs here. So, I mean, maybe I am short selling him a bit. Maybe he is a possible 20-20 guy. I just don't trust Detroit, and I don't trust their development team. So, you know,
I think I think he gets extra points too. Because if you take, you know, what you look like and you get stung by a bee and your face swells up a little bit, I think he looks like you.
Yeah. So
he gets a little bit extra points.
He looks nothing like me, just so people know. He's literally the opposite of me. Athletic, yeah. And versatile is not what I would be considered to be described.
That's what she said.
That is what she said. Let's talk about a couple Cardinals that I know you've been probably rearing to talk about. Alex Reyes, it's kind of old news at this point, but he received his promotion, got a couple starts. We saw some of the brilliant the brilliant arsenal that is Alex Reyes. We also saw a little bit of the inconsistency as well, but I mean, if you just watch one Alex Reyes start, you'll pretty much know after one inning that this guy is something special. And the results right now just have no bearings on his future prospects, in my opinion.
No.
He is going to be moved back to the bullpen. So, you know, if you're listening to this now and you haven't picked up Reyes, this isn't a time in your shallow formats just to go rushing the waiver wire to pick up a guy that's going to start for you the rest of the way, because that's not going to be the case. He only got a couple starts, but, you know, could be a strong guy in the bullpen. Definitely will get you strikeouts. I wouldn't say he's Dylan Betances-esque yet, but
That's what I say.
Yeah, I mean, he might be. The curve is absolutely nasty, and if you saw it at the Futures game, then you know what I'm talking about. But if you've watched any of his recent outings, it's just been breathtaking, to be honest. And I don't say that about a lot of people. It's rare for me to watch a game and just to be legitimately in awe about something I'm seeing. And especially at the Futures game, when I watched Moncada and Reyes, for that matter, there was just certain times where I was genuinely in awe of what I was watching. So there's not much update to give to Reyes. I will ask this question to you. What do you think his role is at the beginning of 2017?
Beginning of 2017.
Major leagues, minor leagues,
minor leagues. My gut is saying minor leagues.
You also said he wouldn't start this year, and he started a couple games.
Only because injuries. He's going back to the bullpen now.
Well, injuries could happen next year.
Yeah, I think next year I'll put him in the least likely outcome out of that group that you gave me next year is he starts the year in the rotation. I think he either goes to the minors, starts the year in the bullpen, or I think least likely is he starts the season with the Cardinals in the rotation.
All right, so where is he in terms of your pitcher rankings in the prospect world?
I have him behind Giolito for that reason.
Okay.
If you told me Reyes was going to be guaranteed in the rotation next year, 100% number one pitcher.
Well, if both of them were going to be guaranteed in the rotation, you would still pick Reyes?
I'd take Reyes. The stuff's better. An 80 fastball, a 70 curveball, and a 65-60 changeup. I mean, fuck.
Yeah. And to be honest, the eye test, man, if you watch Giolito, yeah. I'm not that impressed yet. Like, to be
Reyes honest. I know this is a stupid saying, but Reyes has balls. Giolito kind of looked like he was pitching scared.
Yeah, yeah. And not to say Giolito can't be a future race because I have him in multiple places.
He can be, but he's not right now. He's not.
Yeah.
And Reyes, I think Reyes right now is – I mean, you said the stuff is there. He came up as advertised. I mean, the strikeouts are there. The walks are there. But he suppresses hits so well that the walks haven't hurt him yet.
And sometimes that's to our benefit. You know, when we expect something to happen and it happens, it makes us feel a little better about the player because, you know, then we're not really surprised about what, you know, what kind of output we got. We kind of expected it going in and then we got it. You know, so in terms of what we're looking for Reyes to improve upon, certainly the walks, but the strikeouts in itself are so valuable. And, you know, for fantasy, especially with pitchers, that's first and foremost what we look for is strikeouts. And, you know, because so many things can be corrected if a guy can make hitters whiff.
An underrated thing about Reyes's game that I love too, ground balls. Over 50% ground balls right now.
Yeah, and that's a stellar skill. I mean, we always look for guys with 50% ground ball, 50% ranks among the elite. And to put it in perspective, Zach Britton, who didn't give up a run for something like 70 straight outings or whatever it might have been, he has a typically over a 60-70% ground ball rate. So that's just to kind of leave in the back of your mind there with Reyes. There's not a lot of analysis to give. He's going to be a nice bullpen piece the rest of the way, and then we'll kind of check out what his role might be going into next year. Somebody that we don't know from the Cardinals what his role will be next year is Luke Weaver. We've seen him for a few starts now, Matt, so tell us what you've seen from him and what we can expect for 2017 and beyond.
Well, he's like Seth Lugo. No, I'm just kidding. He's not.
How dare you?
No. Weaver. Weaver's best pitch is the changeup, and it's far and away the best pitch for him right now. He commands the fastball pretty well.
Where's he sitting fastball-wise, like sitting?
92-93, I believe, off the top of my head. I'll look that up for you right now, but I believe that's what
it is. Well, I just want to know from somebody that's watching every single start of his, where he is consistently sitting, because that kind of has that's a big deal to me, because, when somebody says a range of 90 to 93 or 90 to 94, that's obviously a range, but I like to know where they kind of sit in that range. So,
yeah, 92-93, I would say.
Which I'm fine with. That's as long as it's not like 91, 90, 89, that's where I kind of get some problems. But
yeah.
Go on. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. His big thing, like I said, his best pitch is his changeup. It's a legit major league out pitch right now. It's what he goes to all the time. Gets him out of jams. But he's having trouble right now going through. Number one, he's restricted on pitches. They're not letting him go. 90 pitches seems to be where their limit is with him. He gets taken out around that time, so he's going six innings at max, pretty much. The big thing with him is he struggles going through the order the third time, like most pitchers do, obviously. But he doesn't have that put-away breaking ball, and that's a problem with him. He's developed a cutter. He's throwing the cutter a lot more, and he started doing that this year, and he tore through the minor leagues. But he's kind of shied away from it in the majors. The Cardinals aren't very – Wainwright throws a cutter, and Mike Leake, the guy with shingles. How do you get shingles when you're young? Anyways, shingles, and he throws a cutter. Lance Lynn's a cutter. I mean, the Cardinals rely on cutters a lot with a lot of their pitchers, and Weaver has one, but he has not thrown it enough. I think he needs to go to that pitch, and maybe he can be a weird kind of cutter changeup guy, which you don't see that much, but he could do that. He's going to put up really good whip numbers. He doesn't walk a lot of guys at all. I've seen two or three of his starts this year in detail, every pitch, and he actually doesn't get a lot of the benefit of the calls because he's a rookie. I still think that matters, which unfortunately, but I think it does. I think long term, I think you're looking at a Tim Hudson.
Tim not Hudson, like in his prime?
Yeah. Yep.
Really,
I really like this kid. The strikeouts aren't gonna be there, and he doesn't have a good enough breaking ball, as good a breaking ball as Hudson did. But I trust the Cardinals to develop it. I mean, he can hang out. Like Michael Wacha didn't have a good breaking ball until he started being with Wainwright a lot, and Wainwright, he taught him the grip on the curveball, and Wacha got away with the curveball a lot. He had some success with it. But I mean, I think you're looking at a guy in Weaver who can put up 3.2 ERA. He'll give you about 200 innings, strike out about 140. You know what I mean? Limit the home runs. I think he's a good back end guy for you. Good 4-5 starter for fantasy.
Yeah, and that's where I have him. I think that he's like a 4-starter for fantasy, and I don't like to get too tied up in the results right now, especially since he only has 4 starts in the minors. But I like that he was a high round pick. I like that he pitches for the Cardinals because flat out, I mean, the Cardinals do a great job of, developing their pitchers and getting them to have long-lasting, solid, at least solid output.
He's a Florida State boy, too. You like that?
Yeah, I do like that. Especially he hasn't faced great teams. I will say his first start ever in the majors was in Chicago, in Wrigley Field. So he actually didn't do as bad as you might expect.
He didn't do as bad as Jeff Hoffman did against the Cubs for his first start.
yeah, no. So, you know, but his last three outings, they've let him go pretty close to a full amount. I mean, not over 100 pitches, but, you know, he's gone six innings in each of his last two. He went five innings to start before that against Philly. You know, he's given up a home run in every start. I will say that. And he hasn't really been a guy that's given up a ton of home runs in his minor league track record. But he has a couple of nice pitches. None of them, you know, flash elite, but they're nice. And, you know, I'll say this about him is I think that he is reliable. I really like the command. I like the fact that he's not walking a ton of batters. The last three starts, you know, after you get past that Wrigley start, he has a combined 23-4 strikeout to walk ratio, which is certainly encouraging. So
I want to throw this set at you. This encapsulates him perfectly. Basically what I described him. Luke Weaver has zero swings and misses off of breaking balls this year in the majors. That says all you need to know.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But the changeup is a plus pitch right now, and the fastball, he can locate it. So
yeah, and that's all you can really ask for in terms of trying to eat innings right now. So we'll check it out. I mean, his xFIP's sitting at about 3.5, and he's always been a guy in the minor leagues that has posted better ERAs than that. So we'll kind of check it out. And for now, I think that's a pretty fair. I don't know about Hudson, because Hudson in his heyday was like a fantasy number two.
I like the package. I think he's a player that's risen up, at least what I could say my rankings this year. Probably consensus for everybody's rankings this year, because he's had a pretty nice season, but I like him a lot.
Yeah, I like him a lot too. We'll talk about a couple more pitchers, and then we'll end on another pitcher that, you know, is likely going to be starting here very, very shortly, possibly by the time y'all listen to this. Let's talk about Yohander Mendez, who I think is a very under the radar name that a lot of people don't know about, but could be very interesting here especially in the long term, but could be in the short term as well. Matt, give us a little bit of info on Yohander Mendez out of Texas.
Smallish lefty. I got a small frame anyways. He's 6'5", but he probably weighs like 160. So real little dude. Obviously the durability issues come with that. He's kind of got the Julio Urias syndrome as far as, they don't know if he's going to be able to ever put up the starter's workload because he's been so limited on his innings. This year, he's already thrown 111 innings, and he threw one inning today in the majors, and he got bombed. But notwithstanding, 111 innings this year, which beats his previous career high by 50 innings, so he might be reaching the end of his rope. But I like what Texas did, bringing him up here to pitch strictly out of the bullpen, so he's not worth an ad in any format this year. But I like him. He's a good changeup guy. It's his best pitch. He locates the fastball pretty well. But he's not the bad ballpark. I think he's a mid-rotation guy, but he has the upside to be number two if he develops that slider a little more. But I like him overall. He does a really, really, really good job of limiting weak contact. I think his batting average against in the minor leagues this year was 184. I mean, that's legit. So
yeah, in AAA, it was 119. So, I mean, take that for what it is. But I'm a little bit higher on him, and not for the short term. I kind of mentioned that kind of in the intro to describing him. But
yeah, you did.
In the short term, there's not a lot of value. There's not any value here, to be honest with you. He could be shut down at any time. But in the long term, I think that he has a really decent amount of upside, especially if he kind of gets – I mean, his windup's kind of wacky. If you've ever seen any like YouTube clips or watched him on MILB TV or whatever, he's a little wacky, a lefty, you know, and he still needs to, you know, get into that frame a bit more, you know. Still only 21, has a big amount of pedigree in my opinion, you know, and it's been kind of inconsistent, but his upside is certainly that of a guy that I think could be a number two starter in this league. And he's a guy that I just don't think anybody knows right now.
No, they don't.
You know,
I say this a lot about guys, but him having his outpitch be a changeup is awesome to me, because changeup's a field pitch. It's hard to, you know, you either have or you don't. There's not a lot of guys that develop really good changeups that don't have at least a decent one to start. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And his best off-speed pitch being the changeup, I mean, that's why he tore through the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But now his slider has tightened up, and it's become a pitch that you have to be aware of, especially as a lefty. He's going to kill lefties.
I agree. And that's the thing. Is at worst, I think he is an elite lefty specialist, which I don't think that that's the case with him. I think that this could be, you know, his innings will have to go up. And, you know, this year he threw, what did he throw? About a little bit over 110 innings, which is fine.
He's at 111. Previous career high before this was 66.
Yeah. So, you know, next year we'll expect to step up to at least 130, maybe 140, 150, which, you know, could give him Texas rotation is absolute garbage. So we could see him in Texas at some point at the midpoint of the season next year, you know, get us about 5 to 10 starts, which, you know, then we'll get a nice little hang of where he is. And, you know, and hopefully he builds up that frame. The hope is, at least amongst a lot of prospect analysts, is that he builds at least 10, 15 pounds of muscle and can drive his lower half a little bit more. That way he generates even more velocity. Cause right now he's sitting anywhere between 92, 94. Mm-hmm. If he can
get
that
more
back
when he fills out, he should get more velocity. And like, I really like Texas bringing him up here. I mean, if you look at the numbers, you could argue that he's not ready to come up. You know what I mean? Cause he hasn't really been,
well,
this is the
with
first
round
year.
Rock, though, I mean, the strikeout numbers weren't great with round rock and neither were the walks. But in terms of what he did in opponent's batting average and, you know, his earned runs given up, you know, that's enough in itself to bring him up to the major leagues overall. But it's just from a long-term perspective, I certainly think that this is a guy to keep your eye on. And I like him a lot, to be honest with you. I think this is somebody that is, not just your prototypical, like, you know, I know we always talk about some, like, you know, mid-tier starters like Jake Thompson. I would rather take Johan Mendez.
Not close.
Light years ahead of somebody like Jake Thompson, who has a bigger name. Like, everybody knows who Jake Thompson is, but not everybody knows who Yohander Mendez is.
Yeah, I think, and I know I mentioned this with Weaver and Wainwright and stuff. I mean, you got Mendez, who has a fantastic changeup. Now he's going to go up to the majors and maybe learn something from Cole Hamels. Who's got a damn good changeup himself. I mean, that stuff matters in the minors, and that's why teams bring up guys like that. He might not have a major role on the team the rest of the way for the Rangers, and, you know, probably won't pitch for them in the playoffs, but he's going to sit there, and he's going to watch, and he's going to learn, and he's going to soak it in. He knows how to pitch in the majors now. I mean, yeah, he got rocked this year, but now the first outing's out of the way.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's underrated, honestly. Yep. Just the experience of being around some guys that can give you some knowledge on things that you just don't ever get in the minor leagues like that.
Yep. I expect big things from him this year, and I'm right there with you. I might have short sold him when I described him to you. I mean, I still think he's a number two just because the ballpark at best number two, probably more likely mid rotation because I question the durability. But I mean, he's definitely a high upside gamble that you should take. He's better than owning a mid rotation guy.
Absolutely. And I mean, let's talk about a mid rotation guy. That's Brady Rogers, you know, not somebody that we really need to, you know, highlight necessarily right now, but he's another starter from Houston. And he also was the PCL Pitcher of the Year for this year in 2016, which, you know, you take that for what it's worth, but I don't think
Seth Lugo was.
No, he wasn't, because he's going to be winning the Cy Young Award very shortly the NL.
Slightly better award, I think.
Yeah, a bit better. But if he doesn't win it this year, then he got absolutely sniped, and I think that he should protest. But that's just me on Lugo. But in terms of Brady Rogers, not much to see here. Probably a future back-end starter. He is going to he's probably going to end up starting, I think, either Wednesday or I could be wrong. He's going to be starting soon for the Astros. And then after that, we could be seeing him kind of, you know, sent down to more of a long reliever role. But any thoughts on somebody like Brady Rogers?
Back-end starter at best. Doesn't strike out enough guys for me long-term to be anything other than that.
Agreed.
And, but the command is good. I could see him being a 6-7 inning reliever. He's 25 years old, but he's a college arm from Arizona State, third round pick in 2012. He is what he is. I don't think he gets much better than what he is now, and I don't think that's good enough to be a pivotal guy in anybody's pitching staff. Not to shit on Mr. Rogers, but I didn't even mean to say that, but that works.
You're shitting on him. It's fine.
It's fine. Yeah, well, you know. so I have to be critical on somebody, I guess. And nice arm to have on your organization. Every organization wishes they had a guy like Rogers, but they're not really a big impact guys, but he will pitch in the majors for a few years out of a bullpen. So
are you sure every organization wishes they had a guy like Rogers? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that can eat innings.
Yeah. Anyways, Tom Murphy, he is getting picked up.
I like him.
And I like him a lot, too. And I'll tell you why. First off, Nick Hundley is probably going to be out next season for the Rockies after a couple solid years. I mean, he has always had injury problems, Nick Hundley. But the fact that he has been solid for 2 years now, I think, shouldn't go unnoticed, especially a guy that just was kind of left for dead with San Diego and everything. But regardless, that's neither here nor there. Tony Walters will probably not be a long-term guy for them either. He's probably more of a backup, which leaves us with Tom Murphy, who is getting a promotion now. He already had some time last season with the Rockies, and now he's coming back up.
Showed that power last year in limited sample.
He did. He did. He had 3 home runs and 35 at bats. He had a nice 10% walk rate in that limited sample as well. I like Tom Murphy a lot. I think that he is the type of catcher that could easily be a regular starter for fantasy teams, even as shallow as 12 teams. Mm-hmm. He plays, obviously, in the best ballpark for hitting in all of baseball, at least for batting average. His power is legit. He put up 19 home runs in AAA this year, which, again, is home run friendly in itself. But this isn't the first time he's done that. So throughout the minor leagues, we're seeing a nice array of 200-plus ISOs, a good amount of BABIP stability where he kind of sits anywhere between 340, 350. He does strike out a bit, but so does every catcher, and he also can show the ability to walk as well. But I like Tom Murphy a lot. I think that in terms of, at least dynasty catchers, he has to be up there. I mean, he's behind Gary Sanchez, who is the god of all gods. But, besides waiting on guys like Francisco Mejia to make their long-term, debuts, or Zach Collins, or even Jacob Nottingham, why not take a chance on Tom Murphy now and check out what the short-term benefits might be?
I want to make a note. He's been red hot of late too. He's riding a 1200 OPS in the second half in AAA. So that'll play.
that will play, sir.
That'll play. I like him a lot. I think, this might be hot takey-ish. I don't know how great it is, but I like him better than like Jorge Alfaro as a fantasy catcher. I mean, I think Alfaro gets a lot of pub. But I think Murphy has no competition for that job, and he's going to hit in the best park to hit in. And he's 25 years old, which, okay, it's kind of butt catchers bloom late. So you might be able to get a Wellingish Castillo production next year and greater beyond that. I mean, I think he's a good – I think he's a very, very underrated guy for catching for fantasy next year. I really do.
Do you like it better than your Facebook message?
I didn't read that. Let me read it.
I'll say about Murphy, man. He already homered since coming up. They probably will fluctuate in terms of where they bat him. And he probably won't start the rest of the way. He'll probably mix in and get, his usual, backup catcher time, which is typically about 2 to 3 starts a week. So
if they fall out of it, though, there's no reason not to play him with Hundley being an impending free agent. So. Yeah.
And let's be honest, I mean, they've been out of it. I'm not really counting the Rockies as a team
they're hanging around a little bit.
They're hanging around, but they're not really hanging around.
It's an exciting team, though, man. They got Dahl, they got Tapia, you got Trevor Story, Brendan Rodgers in the future. Murphy's not on that level, but he's a guy for sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Jeff Hoffman, I like him. John Gray. A lot of sexiness in Colorado.
This is very true. There's not much more to say other than that. Now let's kind of round this out here. We have a couple of starters from the Los Angeles Dodgers that are going to be making their debuts. One already has made his debut, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Jose De Leon. And Jarrell Cotton was another guy we're going to talk about as well from the Dodgers. Now, Oh, my bad. I keep on forgetting that he got traded. So weird. Yeah. So weird talking about him on the A's. But De Leon's first start here, he ended up giving up 4 runs in 6 innings. But he got 9 strikeouts.
Zero walks. Yeah. Zero walks.
Mind you, take this with a grain of salt. That was against San Diego. But we have long heard that that De Leon is a very high upside, you know, fantasy starter. I think that he has the ability at peak to be a number two starter in fantasy. We've kind of been waiting. I mean, prior to the season even starting, we thought De Leon might get a role just based on the fact that the Dodgers rotation has been in such flux this year with injuries and, you know, just inconsistent performances. I mean, it's been kind of just an all around struggle, but at least for De Leon in AAA, you know, we have 16 starts for him. He had a less than 3 ERA, really solid 2 walk per 9 and almost 12 strikeouts per 9. 194 batting average against, really solid. Struck out 9 guys against San Diego. Gave up 4 earned runs, one of them being a home run, of course. But you got to think that this is a guy that can, you know, be solid the rest of the way. My question to you, Matt, is how many innings do you think he gets, and how much leash do you think he gets as well?
I think he pitches for the Dodgers in the playoffs if wow. need be. He started the year off with an injury, so he kept his innings down. I mean, he's only thrown 86 minor league innings this year. I don't remember what the injury was. We talked about it in previous episodes, I know. But, like, what the hell took the Dodgers so long to call this dude up? With everything they've had happen to their pitching staff, like...
Well, you want to keep Bonoras around, so...
Well, yeah, sure.
Well, how about this then? So, you know, we'll talk about this year and next.
For this year, if you have any fab remaining on pitchers, use it on De Leon because no better pitching prospect is coming up.
Well, I'm asking you who you would drop. So some of the guys, like Chris Tillman, you're dropping for De Leon, I would assume.
Yeah.
Are you going to drop Stephen Wright?
Yep. I don't trust Stephen Wright, so that's full disclosure. I never trust him to begin with.
I agree. Hisashi Okuma.
If in a keeper league, Iwakuma's on the downside. So, yeah, I'd make that move if you had to.
Yeah. Mind you, I don't think you'll have to drop any either of these guys because I think that,
there's got to be somebody else you have that's injured or something that you can get rid of. Yeah.
In redraft, I dropped Vincent Velasquez. I think that he is easy
drop.
He's
done for the year.
Yeah. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. You know, Urban Santana is pretty self-explanatory. I think right now I would regard him as at least a top 50 guy the rest of the way. Zach Davies, that's a good name because he's kind of right on the fringe. Would you take Davies or De Leon?
De Leon because of strikeouts.
And I will say with Davies, like, I've pretty much been vocal that I hate Zach Davies. Like, I think that he's just trash. But he pitched against Kyle Hendricks today on Labor Day that we're recording. And he looked like almost an identical version of him. I mean, he's a really scrawny guy, you know, Mr. Davies. And again, that's part of the reason I've never really been a fan of him and the fact that he has mediocre stuff overall. But the fact that he, you know, I mean, if you looked at his line, it wouldn't be great, but he got kind of crushed on a couple of, you know, calls, you know, in terms of the strike zone and, you know, the Cubs being the way they are.
Shocked. Shocked the Cubs got a call. It's weird.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Let's play the mini violin here. But
end of rant, sorry.
But anyways, Davies pitched better than what his stat line looked like. So regardless, I think De Leon is comfortably a top 50 starter the rest of the way this year. You'll probably be seeing him draft especially if he finishes well, and God forbid if he wins a playoff game and like throws 8 shutout innings, then we really could see his draft stock really skyrocket going into 2017. So I think that your time has kind of passed on getting De Leon for a low price.
I mean, Kershaw, Rich Hill, Kenta Maeda, and De Leon's pretty scary playoff rotation.
Yeah, and I feel like the Dodgers have been struggling all year, but they haven't. They're still just maintaining their lead.
Well, they've been great. The second half's been nuts.
Yeah, like and that's because Adrian Gonzalez, who was on my second half surgers piece, if you didn't read it, turned it around. And, you know, there's just
Justin's Giants are playing well.
Yeah, nobody cares about that. But in terms of Cotton, who, again, I can't believe I botched, is still with Oakland. I totally forgot the fact that he got traded to Oakland, to be honest with you, in that Josh Reddick deal. But, you know, since he's been with the Oakland squad, he has had 6 outings, and it looks like he's done well in the majority of them. You know, he has had a couple blips on the radar here and there, but overall, only one start that was not a quality outing. For the most part, he's gone, you know, 5, 6, 7. He did have one complete game shutout against only one hit allowed and 12 strikeouts, which kind of goes to show.
Yeah, he almost had a perfect game.
Yeah, it goes to kind of show how good Cotton can be. We've already talked about Cotton in an earlier episode, but if you want to kind of give a refresher on where he's at in terms of his development and where you think he might rank in terms of starting pitchers for next year and on your dynasty rankings right now in terms of starting pitchers.
It's tough to say where he'd be on my rankings list for starting pitchers now. I haven't I haven't got down to I haven't completed doing all that yet, but I comfortably he's a definitely a dude to get on. The changeup is a monster pitch, and that's what he uses to get the out pitch right now. We covered him we went in depth on him in our last prospect pod, actually. He's a guy we both liked him better than Grant Holmes.
Yep. And but he's the guy that gets a lot more publicity for sure.
Yep. Yep. I like Cotton. I think he's a mixed league play for next year. I think he's right out the gate. I think he's a strong mixed league option. As opposed, we talked about Raul Alcantara from Oakland today. He's an AL only guy, but I think Cotton right out of the gate is a mixed league viable play in a strong one in a good park. He's going to get the strikeouts. Like I said, the changeup. I love changeups. It's my thing, I guess. Keeps the walks down. He has a little bit of a homer issue like we talked about, but he's in AAA, so throw it out a little bit. But I like this kid a lot. He's athletic. Kid from the Virgin Islands, which is weird. Went to East Carolina. I like kids from that region, I guess. But him and Jeff Hoffman from a lot of East Carolina love today.
Dude, he's gonna. He has 135 innings this year. He has been said that he's gonna be in the rotation the rest of the season, which gives him another four-ish starts, maybe five.
Yeah, about 25 innings. Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, ish. I mean, give or take. But regardless, what I would tell you, the listener, to look for when watching those starts with Cotton is, the fact that he has a nice changeup is known. Like that's the bread that the bread and butter for him.
Home runs are it for me.
Yeah, I mean the home runs are a bit of an issue as well. But overall, what I would look for him is to see if his breaking ball is doing well, if he's able to locate it, if he is, getting hitters off balance with it. That's been his the main question with Cotton the whole time. And once he, made it to AAA with Oakland, his strikeouts did dip down a bit. Mind you, he was with the Dodgers and in their AAA, PCL environment, and was still putting up 11 strikeouts per nine. But the walks dipped down a ton once he went to Oakland's farm system, AAA Nashville. So, again, the thing that I would look for with Cotton is just to make sure that you watch his third offering, either a slider or breaking ball of whatever sort that he throws, and to see if he has maintained a little bit of control with it and can get some hitters out with it. Because he doesn't have the best velocity in the world, so he'll need to rely on a third pitch. He's not Chris Archer out there. He needs to make sure he gets a third pitch under order. And but I do love that he went to Oakland. I think Oakland is great with some of their starters, and the fact that they grabbed him at such a young age, and it probably will make him at least the majority of the time a fastball changeup guy, which plays to his strengths, and the fact that he's in a nice AL park. It all mixes in well, and I think is really good for drafts next year.
Yeah, and for those of you like me who are going to order a Jarrell Cotton jersey, he's number 45, so get on that. I love this kid, man. We've been talking about him a lot, and I like to, we all pick out our guys that we like, and he was one of them we liked a while ago, and I like him a lot. It's a safe play, and you hit the nail on the head with the breaking ball. The breaking ball is the thing to watch. I love this kid a lot, so.
Yeah, I wasn't laughing because I didn't trust you. I was laughing because I keep thinking of Dodgeball, where they keep talking about Cotton. That's a bold strategy, Cotton. See if it works strategy, out for Cotton.
I was gonna make like a picking Cotton joke, but I decided not to. I left that out.
it's probably a strong move.
Yeah.
You probably won't be able to see out there, Cotton.
Right. See how it works out for him.
All right, man. Let's wrap things up. Where can we reach you on Twitter again? And what's going on in Matt's world other than the fact that you just drafted a fantasy football team?
Yeah, man, did my third and maybe final fantasy football league draft today. If on Monday night, if you're listening to it on a later day, I'm tired of football already. Though I want to go back to baseball already.
Well, I don't know how you feel. It never left, Matt. It never left.
But you know what? Being a prospect, guys, it doesn't. We always have stuff to talk about. I'd imagine we're gonna do an Arizona Fall League show coming up soon.
Yes.
About the players that are going out there. There's a lot of interesting names to follow. It's a very, very strong class in their fall league. It might not be as good as last year, but it's pretty damn close. So that's always exciting. The Fall League is actually getting some pitchers that are going out there. Reyes was out there last year, and your boy Francis Martez is going out there this year, so that's exciting. Look for that. We're going to have something on the Fall League. Probably our next episode will be about the Fall League in probably 2 weeks, week and a half. See.
A couple weeks. Yeah, Martez is, fourth in ERA in the AA, second in whip, second in strikeout-to-walk ratio, second in base runners allowed.
Second in your heart to Seth Lugo.
especially second in my heart to Seth Lugo.
Definitely. I just want to say, our plans for this prospect pod, we're going to keep it going in the offseason. It's something that there's a lot of stuff we can talk about. And we're going to get back to, we'll get back to a more weekly thing definitely next year. You know what I mean? Because it's really fun talking prospects with you, Mike. So I like to do it.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. And, as far as our off-season plans, we are going to be continuing the prospect show. We are going to continue the regular main baseball show as well. We're obviously going to be diving into football a bunch, so if you're a football fan, check that out. Check out everything going on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Especially if you're a football fan, there's a lot of new football stuff on the site, so make sure you check that out. Get involved in the forums and such. As far as the Arizona Fall League, it's going to be a blast. I hope that we can kind of get a couple shows out for that because there's a lot going on during that time.
Yeah, it's going to have to be a couple probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll definitely keep you all posted on that. Send some questions in, man, whether it be on Twitter at Matt Tom or at MDTomp24 or at Mike Warner FWFB. Send some questions in. You can also reach us at the site as well. So if you want to go on the site and get a username and all that stuff and post in the forums like, hey, what's going on with Joe Musgrove, what are you having for next year? We'll bring it up on the show. We'll talk your name, give you a little shout out. So definitely get interactive on here, and we'll make sure we give you a little shout out. That way you get famous all in one fell swoop. But
can't beat that, right?
Yeah. As far as my other baseball musings, I have my stuff going out for Baseball HQ every Saturday, my daily matchup stuff for them, and Fantasy Pros, I'm still putting out some Rays updates for them. Check out all of our podcasts on the site, our Thursday show, Darius and Chuck and Eli and Justin are killing it, our main show killing as well as with always. All of us. We also, again, are going to be doing continuing the football podcast, so show some support there. Please rate and review everything. I think that we hit on everything. So,
well, can't go a podcast without mentioning Ysan Diaz is the man. Other than that, we're good.
And Tristan McKenzie. But I found Ysan Diaz first, and Seth Lugo is the best pitcher ever. For myself, stay hungry, my friends. Win some championships. Every night.